And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to a very special edition of the Inside Scoop. With states leapfrogging over each other in the primaries, we are having November 2008 elections quite early. People are focused on the presidential race. But two states in the United States, Virginia and New Jersey, don't hold elections on even-numbered years. They hold them on odd-numbered years. That means that in Virginia and New Jersey, there's going to be an election coming up in just 7 weeks. Now, New Jersey, reliable blue state, Democratic state, not very interesting in that respect. But Virginia is becoming perhaps a bellwether for the nation. Virginia used to be a reliably red state, voted for a Republican candidate for 30 years. 8 years ago, had a Republican governor, both houses of the legislature were Republican, and two Republican senators. But is Virginia changing? With the election of two Democratic governors, and then the nail-biter with Jim Webb beating, of course, George Allen, and deciding the Democratic Senate, some would argue that Virginia is a red state that's going purple, perhaps even blue. What will be Virginia's role in the next election, coming up in just 7 weeks, and what impact will national issues have on Virginia, or Virginia on the national elections? To help answer these questions, I have invited, to your right, Mike Lane. He is the president of Intellifence Strategies. It is his job to get Republicans elected and in Virginia and across the nation. And on my right, but your left, is George Burke. He is the chair of the 11th Congressional District Democratic Committee. He's also the host of the successful Inside Scoop spinoff, Inside Scoop Virginia. Gentlemen, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks. Let me start with national issues. To the extent that, do you think national issues will play a role in the Virginia election? Bush's approval rating is the lowest in his presidency. The Democratic Congress has just been elected. Will this have an effect on the Virginia races? Or will they mostly be about local issues? Mike.
I think it's going to have a tremendous effect. If you look at where the real competitive races are in Virginia this year, they're all here in Northern Virginia. As soon as you get south of the Rappahannock, you pretty much have people who can campaign on local issues, and the voters are tuned into local issues. They know where Richmond is, and they know what Richmond does. Up here in Northern Virginia, in the shadow of the Capitol Dome, where our hometown newspaper is the Washington Post, national issues dominate. Very, very difficult for a local candidate to get a message out on local things. It's going to be a very tough year for Republicans because of that particular situation.
George, you agree. Washington's casting a shadow on Northern Virginia.
I think definitely that's the case, although I think there certainly the transportation issue, which is a local issue, is cutting in these races as well. And one thing I wanted to point out about elections in Virginia, Mike and I get a lot of practice because we have elections every year in Virginia.
That's
it's
true.
Every year.
Every year. The local and state elections are on the odd, and of course the federal elections are on the even.
Every year.
Tell me this. How do the national elections affect Virginia? Is it that people are angry at George Bush and so they're going to pull the lever for a Democratic member of the Assembly? Why should they?
I think it's beyond anger at George Bush. I think it's the overall view of Republican policies as they see them across the Potomac, as they see how they have functioned with Hurricane Katrina, as they see how they have functioned with the war in Iraq. All those things boil down to how they start their view of the local Republican incumbents and candidates.
Is that fair, George? I mean, after all, Republicans in Virginia can't be blamed for what happened to Katrina, and Republicans in Virginia can't be blamed so much for Iraq. Is it fair to take that out on the local Republican Party?
Republicans tend to, number one, stay on message, and number two, have a much better shot at branding, so to speak, from top to bottom, the Republicans than the Democrats do. Well, sometimes Democrats are attacked and looked askance upon because they are such a so-called big tent. Republicans tend to be linear in their view of issues and their view of government. Less government. Just about every Republican advocates less government, and less government isn't always the answer.
How about that, Mike? Are Republicans linear? I know that to some extent you have Republican primaries where you have the moderates in your party pitted against the conservatives in your party. How linear is your party?
Well, there's no doubt that there are, in certain areas, particularly up here in Northern Virginia, where, again, the races are competitive, we do have the two wings of the party, the moderates versus the conservatives. The good news is that we have a track record, not 100%, but a track record of being able to come together after the competitive primaries, after the nominating conventions, and usually coalesce as a party behind our nominee. Whichever wing of the party didn't get their candidate, they usually think victory is more important than standing on whatever hill that they're going to stand on or die on, as the case may be.
Coalesce. Mike, you had the Virginia legislator, the assembly fighting the Senate on the transportation bill. They seemed like they were almost ready to kill each other.
That's legislation. That's not elections. In elections, we tend to coalesce.
You pretend to hug each other and love each other.
In the General Assembly, there's no doubt that the Senate was among the more dysfunctional legislative bodies in the 50 states, I think.
This is interesting. A Republican, local in Virginia, calling the Republican Senate one of the most dysfunctional legislative bodies in the United States.
Absolutely.
Doesn't that mean that people in Virginia should vote for the Democrats?
No. The proximate cause of the problem has been removed. The proximate cause of the Senate being dysfunctional was a senator named John Chichester from Fredericksburg. He has decided to step down. He was the leader of the Republicans. He led the Republicans in a most unorthodox and un-Republican manner. The Senate coalition was split. John Chichester palled with the Democrats much more often than he palled with his own Republicans. Now that he's gone and out of the Senate, I think you'll see a much more cohesive Republican caucus there. Whether or not the Republicans maintain control of the Senate, of course, is a key issue that we're going to face this coming November. But the dysfunctionality of the Republican leadership in the Senate has been removed.
Will the Democrats pick up seats in the Senate?
I don't know. I think there are probably three seats that are very much in play. It's going to be very tight.
But they need five to take control.
No, they only need four, I think, to take control.
Isn't it 24-16 with the Republicans?
23-17, George, help me out here.
If we win four, we take control.
Right.
Oh, it's 23-17.
Right,
so
23-17.
Four to take control. Now, do you agree with Mike's comments about the Senate? First of all, was the Republican Senate one of the most dysfunctional in the country? Amazing thing for a Republican to say. And is that going to change?
Many of the editorial writers suggested that for Republicans, the Senate acted very responsibly. Some people would argue that Chichester, Russ Potts, and some of the guys that have retired were in fact reasonable as opposed to fighting for ideology above all else.
So what is this election? How will Democrats frame the legislative elections in Virginia, which are just 7 weeks around the corner? Is it a referendum on Republican governance? Is it on transportation, the abuser fees? What is the Democratic message 7 weeks from now?
I think the message is that Republicans have governed poorly, that they've had the opportunity over a number of years. They drove us into deficit spending under Gilmore. They have passed some crazy laws that impact Virginians and no one else. They passed it. They crowed about it. Now they all want to go back and change it. Why didn't they take the long view on the front end rather than on the back end? And the answer is simple. They didn't want to raise a single tax, so they raised fees instead. In my book, the fees are still taxes.
The fees, of course, if anyone's been living in a cage and doesn't know, the fees are if you go 20 miles over the speed limit in Virginia, you can end up with a $3,500 speeding ticket.
If you're from Virginia.
If you're from Maryland or D.C., you pay the standard $100, $200.
Even illegal aliens don't have to pay.
Okay, so that's the Democrats. They're framing the message. Number one, they're fiscal conservatives, unlike Gilmore. That's George's message. And number two, the Republicans passed a silly law, this abuser speed limit law, that is very unpopular in Virginia. How do you respond to those two issues, and then I'll let you frame your own?
Well, first of all, you know, the Constitution of Virginia requires a balanced budget year after year after year. There's no such thing as deficit spending in Virginia the way you have it in the federal government. So although certainly the rate of spending has increased dramatically.
Under Gilmore, I mean, Virginia was having problems getting bonds out. I mean, its rating was low. Why is that?
No. Our rating was fine under Gilmore. There was really no problem in selling bonds. Where I think Jim Gilmore went wrong was spending increased as fast as it ever had. In fact, the fastest it ever has in the Commonwealth of Virginia under Governor Gilmore. Now you have to look at that. Why did it? Well, half of that increase was the reimbursement of the car tax to the localities. So you can argue that that's a wash because it decreased the tax that you pay on the local level and maintained the tax that you would pay at the state level as it was reimbursed to the localities. So then you have to look at the other half of where the spending increased under Governor Gilmore. And although I would certainly have personally a large argument with substantial parts of it, still, the majority of it was federally mandated-driven things such as increased spending in Medicare and increased spending in Medicaid, increased spending in education. All those things were the things that drove the spending through the Gilmore administration.
Well, then why did it go up with Governor Warner and Governor Kaine? They're
well, it has gone up. It has gone up. I mean, the spending is astronomical under both those governors. I mean,
as high as under Gilmore?
I forget the numbers, but the saying goes something to the effect that it took 400 years for Virginia to grow a budget that went to 10 million or something like that. From our days as a colony, it took 400 years for our budget to grow to 10 million a year, and then it took 10 more years for our budget to grow to, I think, 62 million a year or something like that. I mean, spending has just been absolutely wild, out of control under almost everybody. I agree it's being appropriated by the Republican legislature. Again, that was something that was driven by Russ Potts and John Chichester that you've heard George refer to. With those two gentlemen retired from the Senate, Walter Stosch is a much better leader. I think you'll see a much more fiscally conservative Senate. And if the Republicans maintain control, I think you'll see things such as Governor Kaine's universal pre-K initiative not get the massive funding that he's asking for because the money simply isn't there. Governor Kaine also wants to start dipping into the rainy day fund because, not that we're short of money, because we had bad budgeting from his office. And he said, well, we have to make this up from the rainy day fund instead of just moderating spending.
George,
this is the argument we're going
to
make.
You'll see more kids going to school hungry. You'll see the quality of education go down. You will see fewer children covered by health insurance. I mean, I could go on with the list.
But tell me this. Virginia, what is it that Governor Gilmore spent money on that was reckless and he shouldn't have spent money?
What Governor Gilmore did was make a campaign promise that he fulfilled about 70% of the way. Which robbed the state of vast amounts of money. Don't get me wrong. I hate the car tax, too. Everybody universally hates the car tax. It was a brilliant campaign strategy. I worked the polls that day, people came in, they didn't even know who they were voting for. They just wanted the guy who cut the car
tax. Do you agree with Mike that most of the spending that increased under Gilmore was something that was federally mandated, or was there a lot of waste there?
I think there was certainly a lot of waste. Gilmore was the one who cut the sweetheart contract with Bechtel on this rail to Dulles project that was a non-competitive bid that put a big shroud of secrecy over the whole project. That's where it started. He was spending like a drunken sailor towards the end of his term, knowing that it would not be come to reality or be exposed until a third of the way into Mark Warner's term.
In fact, it was not the spending under Governor Gilmore for the rail to Dulles. Some people call it boondoggle. Some people call it investment, no matter which side of the issue you're on. The real spending on the rail to Dulles is not yet even in the pipeline. We've done some engineering studies, but we're talking about stuff that's going to be right now 2, 3, 4, 7, 10 years down the road. That is where the real spending's come from, if we get rail to Dulles, and that's still in question.
We have to take a break. We will come back. I also want to give our listeners a chance to join in the discussion, to ask a question if you want on either of these esteemed men, agree or disagree with them. Join in the debate. You've got an election. You've got to pull the lever in just 7 weeks. Do you know who you're voting for? Do you know why? Give us a call, 571-749-1166. We'll be right back.
Good point.
This is Mommy's
bed. Billions, not millions.
Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish,
you feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
Oh, no, 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 mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetness start.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Most of the nation votes on even-numbered years. The voters of Virginia vote every year for federal elections on the even years and for local elections on the odd years. There's an election in just 1 month and a half, and many people across the nation are going to be looking at Virginia to see it as the trend. After all, it was Virginia's race. It was Jim Webb's bare victory over George Allen that threw the Senate into the House, into the Democratic majority. So a lot of people are going to be looking at Virginia. And I'm curious to know to what extent Virginia represents national issues or is really on its own. One of the main national issues that's played a major role in the Virginia races is immigration. Illegal immigration is a big topic all over the nation. It's becoming a big topic in Virginia. Why is that, Mike?
Well, it's becoming a big topic at the state and the local level. Because the federal government has been remiss in meeting its responsibilities. And the reason it's remiss is because there's absolutely no consensus at the federal level as to what the answer to the situation is. So the localities, let's talk about Loudoun County, Prince William County, et cetera. And you've got probably Stafford County going to be added to that, maybe even Spotsylvania County. And the state of Virginia now in the next, well, in the last couple sessions, we've had bits and pieces of the apple that have been bit at.
What's the issue?
Well, the heart of the issue is the localities and the state is incurring all kinds of costs in terms of education, in terms of crime prevention, in terms of court system, in terms of incarceration, in terms of medical care. All these things for
that the federal government isn't covering for illegal.
Well, they're not reimbursing because the federal government has its head in the sand.
So what's the Republican solution for that?
Well, at the state level, the Republican Party will have as a major theme this year the state weighing in and starting to do those things that it can legally under the law. That will allow it to address and minimize the negative impact of the illegal immigration population.
Examples, real quick.
One example is the cost of education. From now on, you're going to have to be able to prove, or if it passes, you're going to have to be able to prove that you are here legally in order to apply for admission to the Virginia State University system.
Give me another example.
That's a key one. Another one is from the localities point of view, we're talking about now having the police start to collaborate with the Immigration Service and start to enforce, after training, immigration law, where if they pick somebody up who has probable cause to be illegal, they will go ahead and investigate them. If they find out they are, then they'll detain them and they'll turn them over to ICE as soon as they can.
Okay.
ICE is immigration.
So, George, the Republicans, they're going to make immigration a major issue. They're going to keep illegal immigrants from going to universities. And if they catch them, they're going to pick them up and deport them.
It's a political ploy, number one. Already, when Jay O'Brien was asked at the press conference.
Who's Jay O'Brien?
Jay O'Brien's a state senator from here in Fairfax in Prince William. He was one of the folks who's using this as a campaign issue.
A Republican.
Correct.
Yeah.
When he was asked how many illegals are currently in the state university system, he couldn't answer it because the answer is basically zero. Legal presence is already required to get into any of the state university system. in terms of...
So this is all just a political
ploy. It's smoke and mirrors, no doubt.
There's not a real problem.
The Washington Post has said it. The Roanoke Times has said it. The Newport News Daily News has said it.
Okay, what about the second point about the police?
The police thing, I think, number one, is going to prove to be unconstitutional. Number two...
Why unconstitutional?
Because they can stop you for speeding, but what is going to give them the probable cause to determine whether or not you are an illegal immigrant? You know, is a lily white guy with like me going to get asked for my papers?
Or
if I'm dark-skinned and Hispanic-looking...
And have an accent.
Or have an accent, and there are many Americans who meet that profile, we're going to start looking at racial profiling. Furthermore, if they do determine they're illegal and they throw them in jail, the county or city residents are going to be paying for this for months. ICE only has the ability...
The
federal immigration authorities only have the ability to deal with 40 detainees per month, not only in the whole state of Virginia, but in Maryland and D.C. to boot.
Virginia, Maryland, and D.C., they can only take 40. So if there's more than 40, Virginia taxpayers have to cover the cost.
They sit in our jails, correct.
Well, now, Mike, what about that? I mean, Republicans don't like higher taxes. They don't like higher spending. You got an illegal immigrant. Let's say, you know, we save the 40 slots for the real violent, dangerous ones. You got another one who, you know, gets caught speeding and is illegally in this country. What you're suggesting, what the Republicans are suggesting, is that Virginia taxpayers take this guy from his job where he's paying his taxes and contributing to the economy and put him in jail because the federal government isn't paying for it. Don't the taxpayers have to pay for that?
Well, in fact, let's take a couple things here. The first is, as long as George was quoting so nicely the Washington Post, let me quote an article in the Washington Post this morning where the ACLU has looked at what Prince William County has done. They've looked at the restrictions they're placing on it and saying that there needs to be probable cause. And they came out with an opinion yesterday that they just think Prince William County is doing it absolutely right. This is the ACLU.
Tell us exactly what Prince William County is doing.
The key thing that the ACLU likes is that they are demanding that there be probable cause before they further investigate the immigration status of anybody they might pick up for any reason, including violent criminals. Now, we're
why
not,
is that probable cause? George suggests it might be the color of their skin and the accent of their voice.
But we're not talking about, you know what, I'm not the county attorney. I'm not sitting here writing the parameters, or the police department attorney writing the parameters as to what that probable cause is going to be. But I guess one of the probable causes might be a guy says, oh, darn, I don't belong in this country. I guess you've caught me. You know, what am I going to do now? That would certainly give them probable cause, which they've been ignoring up to now.
Do you really think that most people that are stopped for speeding are saying, hey, copper, I'm an illegal immigrant, deport me now? I mean, that's a pretty extreme example.
You know what? There are a lot that just don't understand the whole process, and they give up a lot of information, including that information at the time of detention.
What is the relevance? I mean, Prince William has its own issues, and that's what is the relevance of any of this to the statewide elections that Virginia is going to have in 7 weeks? What legislation will change if the Republicans retain their majority? Why haven't they passed it already? Already have a majority.
Because it hasn't been, as I said, it's been in the last 3-4 sessions of the General Assembly, it's been put forward piecemeal, but it has not had a comprehensive set of legislative proposals that will all go through as a package.
Why not? Republicans control the legislature? Why haven't they done this?
Many of these proposals were in fact offered in the last session. 27 bills were offered relative to immigration in the last session of the General Assembly. Only two passed, and they were identical bills. One passed in the House, one passed in the Senate, and basically it prohibits the use of immigration documents for extortion purposes. Whatever that means.
Extortion's already
that's
illegal.
That's the only law that passed out of 27, including this gibberish
and George,
that the Republicans are throwing
out there will be more this time around, because we all know that no matter what legislative body you're talking about, you don't always get what you want passed the first time it's introduced. There are a lot of bills that take 1, 2, 3, 4 cycles of being introduced, getting hearings, going further and further each time until it finally gets there.
Do you think the Republicans are going to increase their majority?
In this election?
Yeah.
No, I think we'll probably
stay even or drop down a bit.
I think we'll probably lose a couple seats in the House, and we might stay even in the Senate, and we might drop down.
If you're going to stay even or drop down, how will you be more successful in pursuing these immigration bills if you haven't been successful in the present?
Because the people are starting to get very frustrated and very upset with this particular issue, and they're starting to demand action at every level from their representatives. And whereas in the last couple, 3 years, the grassroots intensity on this issue has not been strong. I think we all know the grassroots intensity on this issue now is as strong as you can get.
In the last several months.
What's the difference,
firing it up.
George, the Democratic plan for illegal immigrants in Virginia?
Let's just look at what Fairfax County does. First of all, Fairfax County is a more mature county than Prince William. It has been around.
You're the head of the chair of a committee that includes both Fairfax
Correct.
And Prince William.
Correct.
Are you
Fairfax,
attacking half your?
No, I'm not attacking it. When I say mature, I mean it has grown. Prince William's in the throes of growth at this point.
Okay, all right.
In the
you're not using a pejorative term.
Incredible
all right,
I'm
sure you're not attacking all the people that are in your district.
In Fairfax, 25% of our residents are foreign born. Fairfax tends to look at the outcomes of immigration problems. Rather than attempting to round everybody up, ask for their papers, and shipping them off to concentration camps or wherever they're going to send them, instead, when there's an issue, they deal with it. Whether it's housing, they send in a strike team to deal with too many people living in there. Whatever the issue is, they move and deal with the outcome and attempt to resolve the outcome. There's a couple of other issues, though. In Fairfax, we have 40-some-odd different nationalities who have settled here. The reality of the matter, in Prince William, the growth has been abrupt. It's now, I think, about 1 in 5, and it's to a great degree Hispanic. They don't have segments of Koreans, Vietnamese, Ethiopian, you know, I could go on, all the different nationalities we have in Fairfax. And one of the reasons that many Hispanics have settled there, and the assumption that many of them are illegal, is because of the construction industry.
Are they illegal or are they mostly legal?
I don't know. Quite frankly, nobody knows. They're backfilling the lowest rung of those jobs, and the jobs are in Prince William, or were. We're seeing a little slowdown in the housing. So they're moving there because that's where the jobs are.
Well, let me ask you this. If you've got a voter, and they're trying to decide who to vote for in the state race that's coming up in 7 weeks, and they want to deal with immigration, are you arguing the Democratic plan is cheaper than the Republican plan because you round up less people, you don't pay for detention?
The Prince William County Chief of Police in the last couple of days was quoted in the Post as telling the supervisors there that just the enforcement role of having to check people out for legal presence, check people out what their immigration status is, will cost the county millions of dollars to the tune of $14 or $15 million over the next 5 years. And I think that's a low estimate, number one. It's not covering all the incarceration costs, which run $23,000 to $25,000 a year. You're going to have people waiting to be deported who are going to be in jails in Prince William, in Loudoun, hopefully not in Fairfax, although Fairfax does detain people for eons, for months and months and months at county taxpayers' expense.
Mike, I know you want to respond to that. We've got to take a break. I will give you your chance to respond. I promise there are other issues other than immigration, taxes, transportation. And it's interesting because is Virginia a microcosm for the nation? Join in the debate. Pick up the phone and call 571-749-1166. Right back after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
James, don't forget your helmet.
Will do.
Not a helmet.
Your bike helmet.
Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm James Thrash with the Washington Redskins. On the football field, a helmet is an important piece of equipment. I also wear another helmet that's just as important. A bike helmet. It's the most important piece of equipment you'll have the next time you're out on your bike. Wear yours and make sure your kids do too. Safety first with the Skins.
Mister studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
Oh, no, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, Mr. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetened start.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Virginia is in many ways a bellwether of the nation. It is a red state that is possibly becoming purple. It faces elections in just 7 weeks. And my guest, Mike Lane, president of Intelligent Strategies, George Burke, the chair of the 11th Congressional District Democratic Committee and the host of Inside Scoop Virginia, are my guests here. Mike, just briefly, then I want to move on to other topics. George's argument is that the Democratic plan compared to the Republican plan on immigration in Virginia, the Republican plan is not only harsher to the immigrants, but actually more expensive to taxpayers because it costs money to round them up and detain people who are otherwise not law-breaking people. They are law-abiding citizens. They might speed, but otherwise they're doing their jobs and paying their taxes. Locking them up is expensive. The feds aren't paying for it.
Right, and first of all, no one's going around locking people up, you know, asking for papers, things like that.
Well, you have to detain them somewhere.
These are people who will be detained for other causes, and then if it turns out that there's probable cause to investigate them for their immigration status and whether or not they are illegally here in this country. And you know what? Sometimes you just have to spend the money when you find somebody who's committed the crime.
The crime of being an illegal immigrant.
That is a crime. It's against the laws of the United States. And so I think that,
it's actually a civil penalty.
Certainly Prince William has indicated that they are willing to do this. Chairman of the Board of Supervisors down there, Corey Stewart, a very popular guy, has indicated when he got the $14 million price tag over five, I thought it was 10 years, George, but I'll go with your five for the time being. He said that they are willing to pony up 1.4 right now just to get started. And the next meeting they have, they're going to do it. So they're ready, willing, and anxious to do what they can because the people are demanding action. This is not something that the politicians have sat around and thought about. The people are demanding action, as evidenced, I think, by in Prince William County, it was a bipartisan, unanimous vote. Even the Democrats voted for this one in Prince William County.
In order to afford locking up people for illegal immigration violations, in order to afford the entire budget, you gotta find the money somehow. The Republicans have said, we're not going to raise taxes directly. We're going to raise taxes on people who speed. And we're going to say to Virginians who have speeding tickets, we're going to tack on these thousands of dollar fees that don't apply to people in Maryland and the district because they don't pay taxes. We're going to make sure that your speeding is very, very expensive. All those scuff laws that go 75 on the beltway, the Republican Party is going to punish you. What is your feeling on the abuser fee bill? Do you support it, or do you think the Republicans are now backing away from what they used to support?
Nice try, Mark. But first of all, this went through both houses of the General Assembly with large bipartisan majorities. So this was not, by any means, only a Republican thing. Democrats were supporting this, you know, all over.
But the abuser fee portion was a Republican. I mean, the entire bill was supported by everyone.
The entire bill was supported by everyone, yes.
Mainly because the Republicans made it clear from the beginning they would not support any kind of tax increase. We could have solved these abuser fees by adding a penny or a penny and a half to the gas tax. Nobody would have noticed the difference.
A penny or a penny and a half to the gas tax.
You know what? When
gas was pressing up against $3.25, $3.30 last year, I think everybody would have noticed an extra 2 cents on the gas tax. You know, everybody was mad. Everybody was angry. Look, here's where these things came from. There was a need for some sort of transportation bill. They had not done anything on transportation for 20 years under both parties. The Republicans got together. They said, okay, we're going to put together a bill that's politically doable that will raise us $1.5 billion a year for transportation. So they put together this one, and guess what? It happened to be politically doable because the governor was on the team, the Democrats were on the team, the Republicans were on the team, and it passed with large bipartisan majorities in both House. After it passed, after the General Assembly adjourned, then you have the citizen uproar about the abuser fees, which, when you look at them, are probably not as egregious as the press they've gotten, but still it doesn't matter. It's been overtaken by events. These things are going to go. The only question is under what circumstances are they going to go, because the governor is supporting them. The leadership in the House and the Senate was supporting them. The leadership in the House and the Senate has now caved. The governor is the only one who's still supporting them. And I suspect when he gets a repeal measure on that, he's going to
Mike says this isn't the Republicans' fault. It's bipartisan, and heck, even the governor's.
The governor came awful close to gutting the entire bill, leaving one word in it and rewriting the whole thing, except that he knew that the Republicans in the legislature would never pass it, number one. Number two, the head of the Senate leadership, hopefully our next Senate majority leader, Senator Dick Sasslaw from Fairfax County.
A Democrat.
Never cast a vote in favor of the transportation bill, period. The user fees, none of it, because he felt the whole thing was a boondoggle that will not provide appropriate money to get anything done across the state.
But George,
Virginia.
How do you address Mike's point of view that this is you can't throw these abuser fees on the Republican? Both parties are equally at fault.
I don't believe they are. The Republicans control the legislature. The Republicans controlled the tenor in terms of what was possible to pass. Unless the Republicans gave the okay to any kind of tax increase, you wouldn't have one. I mean, they're still hollering about what Mark Warner did to solve the problems that Jim Gilmore created, and they said, we're never going to get fooled again. You know, that's their argument. That's
well, let me
their,
ask you
their
this.
Peon.
I'm asking both of you to do some predictions here, all right? The Senate is 23-17, Democrats to Republicans. So the Democrats need four seats to take over. Is that in the Democratic sights? Could there be a Democratic Senate in Virginia?
Absolutely there could be. I feel fairly comfortable with three of them, and I think there's three more that are very possible. It all depends what happens over the next 50 days.
If you had your best prediction, would you predict a three-seat victory or a four-seat victory?
I'm going to have to predict a four-seat victory.
Of course, because you want a Democratic victory. But three you think you're pretty comfortable with, and then the fourth is a bit of a stretch.
Well, I think there's three others that are very much in play that are potential wins, and there's a couple
and of course, if it's
out
a,
there
if
that
it's a
could
2020
surprise everybody.
Senate, the lieutenant governor cast a deciding vote.
Correct.
If there were a 2020 Senate, then the lieutenant governor's race in Virginia in 2009 becomes a very interesting race, because that
Correct.
Race would determine, okay, so basically.
But more importantly is this year, and it's one reason why so much of this battle is being waged in the Senate, this will have a major effect on redistricting of the congressional districts and the legislative districts in the House and the Senate.
Now, this is very interesting.
Over the next decade.
Here you have a state that elected a Democratic governor and a Democratic senator, and if Mark Warner runs against Tom Davis in 2008, many people feel like Virginia could have two Democratic senators, and yet the state is about 60-40 legislatively with congressional districts, with legislative districts. You think this is due to the Republican drawing of district lines?
Of course, and I'm not even condemning it. They were in power. They
have a right to gerrymander.
To gerrymander it as they
but
saw fit.
But it can gerrymander back if the Democrats capture the Senate or the House.
We can make it fairer if the Democrats get one or the other of
instead
the House.
Of well, because well, now but wait a minute. The governor could veto it too. Right, if you have a Democratic
Correct,
governor.
Correct, but you still have, if you have both houses controlled by the Republicans.
It's going to be hard to do the gerrymandering.
You need to have one of the houses to really have some real control over the process. I mean, and it's clear. I mean, in the district that I represent, the 11th District, Tom Davis has held it now for over a decade.
Virginia has 11 congressmen.
Correct.
Three are Democrats.
Correct.
Three out of 11, so that's
Correct.
A lot less
yeah.
than the half of the purple
Correct.
State that you would think.
And but, you know, the gerrymandering of the 11th district made it a fairly strong Republican district on the front end, but it has changed dramatically since.
Now, let me ask you one more question.
Now, the numbers are dropping for him.
The House is basically 60-40. It's 58, but the two independents mm-hmm. vote for the Republicans.
Yeah.
You don't predict the Democrats are going to take the House.
No, I think we're going to win a few seats.
What's your prediction? Five, six? I'm going to hold you.
I'll say four.
You'll say four seats. Mm-hmm.
I'll go four in both houses.
And then you think you can do more in the next cycle?
Oh, no. But right now,
four seats.
I'd say
All right,
four
Mike,
seats.
How many seats in the Senate? How many in the Assembly?
Probably 2 to 3 in the Assembly. We'll go the other way.
To the Democrats.
To the Democrats, right. In the Senate, it's a much more difficult situation to assess. The races are a lot more high profile. They'll be very well funded. You've got some pretty good incumbents that are defending the seats, even though you've got good challengers that are going against them as well in terms of the campaign. I could argue a scenario where it stays the same, and I could argue a scenario where the Democrats run the table.
But
certainly,
you don't argue a scenario where Republicans pick up a seat. That's not going to
happen. I would not argue that. No, I think we're looking at the Republicans being between 20 and 23 at the end of the election. Being a nice guy, I'll concede one right now, so I'll make it 22 to 18. It might even be 21 to 19, but I don't think it's going to go. I mean, I don't think they're going to run the table. It could. Certainly, they ran the table last year in the federal elections, and nobody expected that. So
now, let me ask you this. On the issue of redistricting, I mean, do you agree that the Virginia lines are drawn to help Republicans as much as possible?
Oh, absolutely.
And you think that's going to change in 2010, because you'll have at least a Democratic governor or one of the houses that are controlled by Democrats.
Gerrymandering is a time-honored tradition, you know. I mean,
I don't know about honored.
We don't know whether we'll have a Democratic governor in 2010.
Right.
We have another election.
Right.
That's
right. We don't know what we're going to have there. Certainly, if the Democrats are in power, there will be wholesale redrawing of the lines to probably reverse the numbers completely. You'll go from 23 Republican senators to 23 Democratic senators, and you'll go from maybe if we lose two or three, you'll go from 55 Republican delegates to 55 Democratic delegates. That's the powers of incumbency and the powers of majority control. George was nice enough to say that it wasn't he. Well. If it's, you mean if one house
then
is in one side,
then it'll actually be fair. Perhaps if you have a Democratic senator, Republican,
there'll be more negotiations.
Well,
interestingly
enough, here's what happens: the Senate is not usually as overtly partisan as is the House in terms of gerrymandering, because they got a club and they want to take care of their boys and their girls, and you know it's not as vicious a process in the Senate. In the House, it is a vicious process. I would expect the Democrats to be absolutely bloodthirsty, ruthless if they took over. I would expect,
as the Republicans were in 2000?
As they were in 2000,
okay.
Right. You know, right. Absolutely bloodthirsty, ruthless on that kind of thing. But the other thing is, if you have one house in control of one and the other house in control of the other party, typically the Senate leaves it to the House to draw their own lines, and the House leaves it to the Senate to draw their own lines. So you're not going to have that cross chamber difficulty, and the only thing you'll have is maybe a discussion with the governor. Governors have provided guidance and counsel, but have not usually messed their hands up all that much in the redistricting process, believing it's the prerogative of the General Assembly to do that.
But there will be some horse trading between the leadership of the two bodies, between the House and the Senate.
If there's,
you know, if you do this, we're going to chop the heads off of three of your favorite guys.
Well,
right.
Let me ask
that
you
type
this.
Of stuff.
You, it's your job, Mike, to prepare candidates for election, prepare Republican candidates for the election. What are your themes? What are we going to see? The ads are about to go across the television. Virginia voters are going to be saturated with every day seeing an ad for candidates they've probably never heard of over the next 6 weeks. This is the calm before the storm, folks. What is the Republican agenda for 2007?
The Republican agenda is to fix the abuser fees.
That they themselves created.
Well, it was a bipartisan creation of the abuser fees.
Under the Republican legislature.
And one of the difficulties of the abuser fees was the fact that it applies to Virginians only. And that was purely a creation of the governor, the Democratic governor, who did that. Now, he might argue he did it for what he thought were constitutional reasons or this or that. The fact is, it was his amendment to the transportation bill. Governors are actually allowed to propose amendments in Virginia, unlike a lot of other places. And it was him solely that created the situation of applying only to Virginians. So we're going to run on fix the abuser fees. We're going to run on fix the immigration thing with a broad-based, solid, comprehensive proposal. And we're going to run on fiscal responsibility. Those are our three issues.
All right. First of all, do you want to respond to the issue about Tim Kaine and the abuser fees?
The governor's not up for re-election, number one. The governor was dealing with the hand he was dealt, and it was a pretty poor hand
by the
Republican legislature. Any way you cut it, you can't get around it. The proposal, this whole proposal was the brainchild of Delegate Dave Albo, who's taken credit for it since he has no opponent this year, and Tom Rust, Delegate Tom Rust, both Northern Virginians. Tom Rust does have an opponent, and this issue has been causing him some real problems in his district.
The fact of the matter is, though, what this did was it got us $1.5 billion for transportation. Take your break.
We have to take a break, and I want to get to transportation issues. And to your questions, please call in and join the debate. 571-749-1166. Right back after this.
Some people in Fairfax County don't know what public access means.
Some think it's just another channel on the dial.
But it's much more than that.
It's the voice of the people.
People like you.
Your neighbors, your friends,
or your family.
People who want to share ideas,
opinions,
cultures, lifestyles,
art,
sports,
music,
events, entertainment,
history,
science,
beliefs.
People who want to learn about television,
producing,
directing,
cameras,
audio,
lighting,
editing, or radio, talk, music.
Whatever you think people should hear.
Public Access is the place where everyone has a voice.
And it's the place where that voice gets heard.
A place where you can create your own form of personal expression.
So what do you want to say?
Whatever it is.
You can say it here.
Because we're Public Access.
For the people.
By the people.
It is about balancing our choices between the gray of the concrete jungle and the stunning beauty of the real one. Between a stoic facade of granite and the fury of the canyon. It's why there's EarthShare, the simple way to find balance. EarthShare is the workplace giving program bringing the leading environmental groups under one umbrella. Support EarthShare, support them all. EarthShare, please ask your employer about workplace giving. To learn more, visit our website.
Thousands of kids in this country have everything it takes to go to college. Except the money. The United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We've got a very special show focusing on Virginia because Virginia is having elections in just 7 weeks from now. Will it be a bellwether of national elections? To some extent, the elections in 07 might affect the elections in 08. I want to focus on that. The very popular former Democratic governor of Virginia, Mark Warner, often mentions the candidate for president of the United States, has decided he's going to take the Senate seat vacated by John Warner. It'll be interesting to see if anyone pulls the lever for Warner, thinking it's John instead of Mark. I always wonder about that, if there's someone still in Virginia
there
that does that.
There may be a few Republicans
that still do that.
Still think
but
it's John.
Tom Davis is the congressman who's represented a Democratic district for many, many years. He's thinking of running, and if he runs in the Senate, that seat may well open up congressionally for the Democrats.
I think, and Tom Davis himself has said, to certainly to me and to others, that if, in fact, when he vacates that seat, it's a Democratic seat.
So if Tom Davis runs...
I mean, I don't want to sound cavalier about it. Well, certainly, the work has to be done. The money has to be there.
But if Tom Davis runs for the Senate, you have a definite loss for the Republicans of the congressional seat, and if he runs against Warner, he might lose the Senate seat as well. Would you urge Tom Davis not to run?
It would. No. Tom Davis, I believe, is going to run. He's going through the preliminaries now to put together a campaign that he needs to that'll be a winning campaign. He's probably...
You think he can beat Mark Warner?
He can, yes.
It's a tough battle.
It'll be a very tight race. The first thing he's got to do is get the nomination, and that means getting past former Governor Gilmore in a potential nomination fight. As Tom Davis is putting together his campaign, Jim Gilmore is putting his campaign together as well at this time. It remains to be seen, number one, who would win that nominating contest. And we don't even know whether or not it would be a primary or a convention, which would probably have some influence on who would win the whole thing.
But if Davis runs and loses to Gilmore, he still has to vacate his congressional seat.
Correct.
So if Gilmore wins, you would say that Davis has a better chance against Warner than Gilmore. Certainly. Being more in the middle. I mean, he's more moderate Republican versus Gilmore conservative Republican.
If you forced me to place a bet right now, I would bet that Tom Davis would beat Jim Gilmore in the nominating process, be it a convention or a primary, and I would bet that the Senate race would be too close to call at this point.
Okay.
I will share half his bet. I believe Tom Davis all along, I think, has believed his primary opponent was going to be Jim Gilmore.
Mm-hmm.
I think his dream team would be to have two ultra-conservatives in that race.
Yeah, then they can
and
split
he
it
runs down
the
middle.
Plurality.
I do not think he will beat Mark Warner. Of course, that's a year and a half away. I do think he will give Mark Warner more of a run for his money than Jim Gilmore would. Jim Gilmore couldn't even raise any money for president, running as president. He ran a horrible presidential campaign. He does not have a track record of success.
So you'd like to see Jim Gilmore win the Republican nomination?
Absolutely.
Because he's an
but I'd
easy
like to
opponent.
See Tom run in the primary so I get him out of the 11th district and
I
we
see.
Can elect a Democrat. Then.
I see.
Here's the way this campaign shakes down. If it is, and we all know that it's going to be Mark Warner because nobody's going to challenge him. The nomination is his for the asking, as
right.
it should be.
Although, I was at the Democratic Party of Virginia meeting this weekend. The mm-hmm. steering committee and the central committee voted that we will have a primary, which means that...
Right.
Which
means anybody who's stupid enough to try and run against Mark Warner's personal fortune of $200 million is going to be...
Yeah, no, Mark Warner's got the nomination.
At the same time, they will have this smoke-filled closed room where the party bosses will smoke their cigars.
You know what?
I'm trying to figure out what happens. And I know you don't necessarily support that.
Oh,
well, is that true? You're going to have a convention?
You know what? I just want the record to reflect that there's nothing wrong with cigars, okay?
Is it Cuban?
Well, it is, yes.
Don't say that
on
TV.
That's a crime. I don't know.
Don't admit that.
Importation is a crime. Possession is not.
He studied this law carefully.
Anyway.
I'd ask him a question, but I won't.
We're not trying to convict you, Mike.
The situation is...
We need it for the TV show.
If it's Jim Gilmore against Mark Warner, it will revert to the old Republican strategy, probably, of more or less conceding Northern Virginia to the Democrats and going all out to try and drive your base out in the rest of Virginia, Rova, as opposed to Nova.
Will there be a convention rather than a primary?
I don't know that yet. Hang
on. No one knows.
If it's Tom Davis will compete very well up here in Northern Virginia with Mark Warner. He's been on the ballot 12 different times. He's won 12 different times. It'll be a hell of a good race. I really look forward to that, and I'll be working very hard for Mr. Davis. Now, your question is, what form of nomination will it be? That decision will be made by State Central Committee, as it was by 13th of October or 15th of October, or something like that.
Are you recommending one or the other?
I would like to see a primary. I think no matter who wins it, it would benefit both candidates who need to be reintroduced to the... Tom Davis yeah. needs to be introduced statewide. Jim Gilmore needs to be reintroduced to the voters. I think a primary where they're out there, you know, on the airwaves campaigning among the entire populace rather than just the 13,000 people who would attend a convention would be beneficial to both of them. I really think it'd be good.
I understand that Davis, well, I understand. You and I both know that Davis has been out there for years mm-hmm. doling out money all over the state. This
right.
is not... Tom
He's been looking for this race.
Sure.
Even waiting for John Warner
Tom
to
calculates
a long time.
He's a calculating politician.
Right.
It's
not a secret that, you know, there were some people... Tom was prepared to run 6 years ago if John Warner stepped down
mm-hmm.
then. John Warner did not step down, so Mr. Davis spent another 6 years, you know, exhibiting leadership in the House. But he's ready to go now. He's been working on this for a while.
We just have to figure out which Tom Davis he's going to be.
The one that supports Bush?
Well,
or the
in the
one
last, you know, Mike and I think, both understand where he was in those years under the Army and DeLay wing of the party. He was, there was not a single Northeastern Republican who held a committee chairmanship. And you didn't get a committee chairmanship as a Republican in the House unless you supported the leadership, almost lockstep.
So you're saying Tom Davis did that?
Well, I think if you look this year, his record of siding with Bush is far lower than it was, let me get my numbers right. I think it was 06, 05 or 06, he was way up there in the 85-90% range. Now he's down in the 65% or 65% range.
It was interesting to me is that, because I think Mark Warner's got a very good chance of beating Tom Davis, and then you've got Jim Webb.
Well, it's the other way around. It's Tom Davis has some kind of a chance of beating Mark Warner.
Right, I mean, exactly. No, Mark Warner, I think, is the... I mean, the latest polls, I think it was you that told me, Mike, he's 28 points
right.
up. Now, that's going to change, obviously,
right.
with time.
It's a name identification poll that came out today,
I
and anybody who saw it on the news tonight,
clearly,
they have to understand that.
Warner's the guy to beat. But here's my question. You could have two Democratic senators and a Democratic governor from the state of Virginia that's still so gerrymandered that you can't... You might still have a Republican legislature and what's becoming an increasingly Democratic state.
Some things take time. Mike and I both understand that. Okay. What you'll have, though, is two Democratic senators who will quickly gain legs and traction
well,
in the Senate
Democratic
and earn
senators.
Respect, much as John Warner has, because they are centrists.
Right, they're both centrist
Both
people.
Of them are centrists.
Tell me this. Is Virginia a bellwether for the nation? Is Virginia becoming, going from red to purple, a bellwether of where the nation is heading? Let me ask both of you that question.
It remains to be seen. You know, things
oh,
can
come
change.
Come on, that's a wheels on word. Come on, give me a...
Mark, when the Republicans
sounds
took
like
over...
Tom Davis talking about Iraq.
When the Republicans took over the General Assembly back in 2001 or whatever it is, this was the 30-year realignment of the Virginia legislature. And right now, the realignment is being threatened a mere 8 years later. So things can change. You never know what the issue matrix is going to be. I'm not as scared about the 08 election as some other people are because the president, I'm not one who's going to throw him under the bus. I think George Bush has done a lot of good things, and I admire him for his presidency. But nonetheless, he is unpopular, but he's not going to be leading the ticket in 08. We're going to have a new standard bearer. It's going to be somebody who is quite popular and acceptable to the mainstream of American people.
And someone who supported the Iraq War.
The issue matrix is going to be different. So I think, you know, I don't fear 08, and I don't think any Republican should fear 08.
But do you think that how Virginia goes in 07 will be a bellwether for how the nation goes in 08?
I think it will send some signals, but it's not just Virginia. Look at Colorado. Look at the changes that have occurred in Colorado in recent years, which New Hampshire. Both of the legislative bodies, the House and the Senate, flipped. And in terms of the House, it was the first time in like 100 years.
Well, are any states becoming more red? We've named three states that are becoming more blue.
No, I think the country was very red for a while. And, you know, politics is a pendulum. It goes, you know, back and forth. And when you were about as red as you were going to get, it starts swinging back. You know, you have the gradual turning purple natural progression of politics.
So we're heading into a blue trend. On that, both of you agree. Whether it goes far enough...
I think the overall trend is away from red and towards purple, bluish.
And in 08, the Democrats are going to win seats federally?
We're going to win lots of Senate seats. I'm not sure we're going to win lots of House seats. I think we're going to lose some House seats.
In the Congress.
That were won because of this trend and because of where Bush was, that were Republican seats that Democrats won and maybe haven't been able to build a Democratic base.
The Senate does seem really Democratic this year. There are a lot of Republican seats that are vulnerable.
It's mathematics.
Mathematics, there's a lot. Virtually everyone is saying the Democrats are going to win seats in the Senate.
Yeah.
You think the Democrats will lose seats in the House?
Or hold about the same.
I
don't see them winning a lot in the House, and I could be wrong, but I just... Seats that I know are Republican seats that are currently occupied by Democrats.
Right.
I haven't necessarily seen them do the work they need
to
do. Republicans
take back the House of Representatives? Will Nancy Pelosi be out of a speaker chair?
It's a long shot. It's possible. But George has it analyzed exactly right. Here's the deal. In the overwhelming tidal wave of Democratic victory last cycle, there were a lot of Republicans in Republican districts that were swept out because of the tidal wave. And some of the Democrats who won those seats are going to have very difficult times hanging on to them because they are essentially Republican districts. So I will make an argument that we'll pick up a marginal number of House seats. Can we take over the House of Representatives? Yeah, we can, but I wouldn't bet a lot of money on it today.
We've got very little time left. Do you think that Virginians have trouble concentrating on the state elections that are coming up around the corner because of all this focus on the federal elections? Yes or no?
No, I think that most Virginians are beginning to pay attention now.
Mike?
I think it's difficult for a local candidate in Northern Virginia to get a local message out in the shadow of the Capitol Dome.
But you can vote. Please, do not forget to vote. If you live in the state of Virginia, there is an election coming up 7 weeks from today. Know the issues, pull the lever, do your civic responsibility. This is Mark Levine, signing off. We'll be right back.